It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Money is pouring into the Pennsylvania Supreme Court race, and that means negative ads finding their way to a television screen near you. A political advocacy group with ties to the Koch brothers is waging a $1 million digital and TV ad campaign supporting Republican state Supreme Court candidates and attacking Democrat Kevin Dougherty. Meanwhile, a Democratic-friendly group, Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform, launched its own ads attacking Republicans last week, which were criticized in a recent Post-Gazette editorial. Does all of this money coming from outside groups damage the process of electing these judges? I'm joined now in studio by Post-Gazette reporter Chris Potter, who's been covering the state Supreme Court race. Chris Potter, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. It's always good to be here.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. Do you think outside money and influence is threatening the process of electing state Supreme Court judges in Pennsylvania? 412-246-2002, the number to call with your comments and questions. So, Chris Potter, last night I was watching television. I saw the ad attacking Kevin Dougherty.
Yeah.
It's airing across much of the state. And in it, the Republican State Leadership Committee charges that as a Philadelphia family judge, Judge Dougherty, quote, shockingly allowed a young girl to be placed in the custody of a convicted murderer. Tell Kevin Dougherty, no more excuses. Keep our children safe, end quote. What would a little fact checking tell us about that ad?
So the ad refers to a 2002 case where Judge Dougherty, who has long been in the Philadelphia family court system, had a 10-year-old girl come before him. It was a truancy situation. She had not been going to school. And he did indeed recommend that she be placed with her aunt. The issue and what makes this ad pernicious for a lot of Democrats is that judges rely on the representations of the people who come before them. And this placement was recommended by city officials who were in charge of child welfare and the family itself. And so the judge said, is this what we want to do with this child? And the answer was yes. And the judge, as part of that ruling, said, well, we're going to make sure that officials go and check out this home in the months to come. This is sort of a provisional placement. And that work apparently was not done. And years later, it did turn out, not only had this woman been convicted of third-degree murder in the 1980s, but years later it turned out that she was actually allegedly housing mentally challenged people in her home, imprisoning them essentially so she could collect their Social Security checks, and also abusing the young girl in question. Beatrice Weston was her name. So the
We've all sat through court proceedings where you'll see the judge look to other people and say, what is it that we want to do here? What,
right.
And it's not out of the ordinary. In fact, it is more par for the course that a judge would take the advice of someone who's familiar with the case history and say, this is what we would like to do. And he'll take that information, he'll weigh it. But if what he's being told is this is a situation that is safe for the child, then he's going to go along with it.
A judge really has to rely on the representations made to him or her on the bench. And in this case, remember, this was child welfare. These were people, this is their job to make sure children this wasn't some sort of adversarial proceeding where there were big arguments going back and forth. This is the kind of thing judges in this system do as a matter of course, day to day, week to week, year to year. So yeah, I mean, you can see why the judge, Judge Dougherty's campaign would be very upset about this ad and about the people who are placing it.
Because it's not really telling you all the facts per se. And of course, someone watching it who's not familiar with the judge's background or what the true facts are in the case may in fact be alarmed by what they see and say, my gosh, I can't vote for that individual based on this.
Yeah, and in fact, that particular ad, there's a line in there where it says the judge said he could not recall being told that this woman was a murderer or whatever. And I mean, that quote is taken out of context.
Right.
It comes from within a couple days of this thing happening, the judge said he couldn't recall whether anybody had told him about this. They were still trying to figure out what was going on. So they kind of take this quote from, you know, when everybody was trying to sort of figure out what the truth here was. And then they treat it as if, oh, I placed somebody with a convicted murderer because it just kind of slipped my mind that day or whatever. And that's really not the case at all. There was subsequent legal action, a federal lawsuit against the city of Philadelphia because of this case. There was no allegation in that complaint that the judge had ever been told. And in fact, there's language to the contrary. And the federal judge who has been handling this case has written opinion saying the court was never told about this background. And the court was also not informed subsequently of the family's own suspicion of abuse here. So this is a painful case. There's no question about it. I have yet to see any evidence that suggests that Judge Dougherty could have been expected to know what was going on in this household.
So who is behind these ads? Where is the money that pays for these expensive ads coming from?
Right. So the organization behind this ad is the Republican State Leadership Committee. And this is a national organization that collects money from all kinds of people, corporate interests of various kinds. And as you mentioned at the top, the Koch brothers, who are kind of famous, who are sort of famous / notorious, depending on your political leanings, for supporting a lot of conservative causes.
Right. And it's important to explain who they are. A lot of people have heard of the Koch brothers, right, but some haven't. So
These brothers are members of the Koch family who own Koch Industries, which is a Kansas-based firm. It's privately held. I believe it's the largest privately held company in America. And they're involved in all kinds of various industries. And they, in recent years, have been supporting a bevy of conservative candidates and causes. Perhaps they're best known as the folks who kind of bankroll Americans for Prosperity, which is sort of a conservative advocacy group that a lot of people have heard of.
The negative ads are coming from both sides.
That's correct.
There are ads targeting Republican candidates for the state Supreme Court as well, coming from a group called Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform. What do we know about this particular organization?
You got to love these names, right? There's not a Pennsylvanians for Keeping the Courts the Way They Are, whatever, right? Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform is a much newer group. They were just hatched in August. They are largely financed by unions, specifically, most prominently, the Pennsylvania State Education Association, which represents a lot of teachers across the state, and the Service Employees International Union, SEIU. It's also got strong ties to the Philadelphia Trial Lawyers Association. They have their own political committee, which then gave a lot of money to Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform. Their attacks, too, have been not particularly edifying. So there's definitely stuff on both sides. The one that I find sort of the most kind of head scratching is one of the ads accuses Judge Ann Covey, who's a Republican, of having, I think it's filed improper information in a previous campaign.
Of saying what the ad accuses her of doing is lying about authoring published legal articles, and Republicans are calling the claim demonstratively false and defamatory.
And in fact, yes, there is now a threat of legal action from the Covey campaign, a letter sent by Richard Sprague, who a lot of reporters know of as being sort of a super lawyer who once successfully sued the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I think managed to get the Pennsylvania Bar Association itself to back down. So this is a heavy hitter, and they have basically told the Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform that they will be liable for any damages.
Well, is there a cease and desist?
Yeah, that's order? The letter is basically telling them we're asking you to cease and desist, and it's going to get ugly from here on.
And
in.
What if they don't?
There is certainly the potential for legal action going forward. I mean, this would be the argument here is that that the judge has been libeled by this claim that she did not author these legal articles that she supposedly claims to have authored. I will say that the evidence for this, there's not been much cited on the Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform website, so it's hard to really know where that claim is coming from.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Post-Gazette reporter Chris Potter. We're looking into the negative ads that have found their way into the Pennsylvania Supreme Court race, coming from both sides. There was an editorial in the Post-Gazette this week which criticized what the Democrat groups are doing to undermine Republican candidates, and you just heard the case of Ann Covey and Covey, and also, of course, the targeting by the Republicans of Kevin Daugherty. So what are your thoughts about the outside money and influence that has entered into the state Supreme Court race? Is it threatening the process of electing state Supreme Court judges in Pennsylvania? We'd like to hear from you. 412-246-2002. What questions do you have about this race and also the process, which in this case, these Supreme Court judges will be elected? There are seven candidates and three openings on the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court. In some states, the judges are appointed. Here in Pennsylvania, we have an election. What are your thoughts about the system that we have? Are you participating? Are you paying attention? What concerns and questions do you have? 412-246-2002, the number to call. Email esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Let's get into the history. You've been here for quite a while, Chris, mm-hmm. paying attention to this and covering it. How has the process evolved in Pennsylvania?
You know, there's a tendency, I think, to act as if this is all new spending or whatever, and it's not. There have been cases like this before. Perhaps the best known dates back to 2001, when Michael Eakin won his current Supreme Court seat over Democrat Kate Ford Elliott. There's an organization called the Law Enforcement Alliance of America, which is sort of a pro-gun, pro-law and order type group. And they took out ads sort of, which would be very similar, very much in keeping with what we're seeing right now, sort of suggesting that—
Accusing the judges of not being soft on crime. Right.
Not being soft on crime, sort of, you know, the whole they're going to take your guns kind of stuff. So to some extent, that is well established here in Pennsylvania, but there have been some changes. There's obviously the Citizens United case in 2010, which basically took off a lot of the, you know, kind of opened up the floodgates for spending by corporations. It's important to say Pennsylvania has never had campaign contribution limits. If a union wanted to give $100,000 to a candidate directly, they have absolutely been able to do that through their political committee. What's significant about these outside groups is corporations can contribute directly from their coffers. In Pennsylvania, you can't do that. If I'm just trying to pick somebody, Consul, for example, the gas, driller, and coal company, I can't write a check from my corporate account and give it to a candidate.
Right.
But what I can do is write a check and give it to one of these outside groups and have them advertise on that candidate's behalf or at least against the people that I don't want to have win. So that's a significant difference, and one of the things these outside groups can do. The other thing they do is the candidates themselves in chill races are a little different than your typical gubernatorial race. There's an expectation that you're going to be a little above the fray, right? You're not going to engage in the kind of mudslinging that a state rep or a state senator might do.
We've seen that traditionally.
We have generally seen the candidates themselves restrain themselves a bit more in these judicial races than other races. And part of the reason for that is the State Bar Association asks these guys to sign a thing that says, I pledge not to engage in any misleading advertisements or whatever. So it's more the case in these judicial races. The difference between an outside ad and the ads by the candidates themselves is a little bit more marked than the difference in a more conventional political campaign.
The groups Justice at Stake, Pennsylvanians for Modern Courts, and the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University are tracking these ads and estimate candidates and special interests have purchased more than $1.6 million in airtime through October 27th, which is next Tuesday. And that's a week before this election takes place, which is November 3rd. What do you make of the spending amount? And you know, is this a situation where it appears to be that this particular race in the state of Pennsylvania is getting a lot of attention
right.
because of the three open seats and the fact that it could totally swing the majority on the court.
That's right. Yeah. And that explains why there's and let's face it, the courts are very powerful and very important in modern American life. I mean, we can go back and look at the previous court under Chief Justice Ronald Castile, whose retirement is the reason one of these mm-hmm. three seats is open. This is a court that issued a very important landmark case involving the state's regulation of natural gas drilling interests, Act 13. So, and obviously natural gas, big industry. We will see in the months and years ahead arguments about, for example, when the city of Pittsburgh tries to legislate an ordinance requiring employers to offer 6 days. Does a municipality have the ability to do that in the state? That's likely to come before
and that was
the
a
Supreme Court.
Question that came up 2 nights ago at the state Supreme Court debate in Homewood, which you and I both attended, and I moderated, and there were
and a fine
concerns.
Job you did.
Oh, thank you. But there were concerns about that
yes.
came up from the audience.
Right.
So there was an audience of very concerned citizens paying attention to this. Any other particular cases that or issues that this next court will decide?
I think there's a lot of it will have to do with the powers of the governor. Tom Wolf has, in his early months as governor, sort of articulated a very strong role for himself as governor in terms of death penalty moratoriums, mm-hmm. for example. Some of these fundamental issues that we always seem to be arguing in the United States and in Pennsylvania in particular, these things will come up again and again. Who's to say there won't be a legal challenge involving abortion at the state level somewhere down the road? I mean, it's hard to say kind of where that ball is going to bounce, but it's obvious that what we're looking at here is a generational change here in the court. I should also say that just in the political partisan realm, you mentioned the fact that this court's political makeup could swing one way or the other. This is key because after the 2020 census, the way that the states reapportion their districts and the way that's handled in Pennsylvania for legislative districts is the courts typically appoint a fifth swing member of the commission. So each Democrats and Republicans both get two appointments, and then there's a fifth one, and that's appointed typically by the court. Depending on how that court is made up, that person is likely to either be a Democrat or a Republican. So we're not just talking about the court. We're talking about what the legislature will look like in 2020 and beyond. So this is big stuff. This is big stuff.
This could have far-reaching consequences yes. for cases coming before the courts in
yeah.
the coming years.
And what laws are on the books that they end up challenging, right? I mean, what we have right now is a Democratic governor and a Republican-controlled legislature, and how that legislature is constituted for a full decade could well be determined here in the next couple weeks.
So the question that I asked at the outset was, does all this money pouring in damage the process? And we've already established during the course of this conversation that these ads coming from both sides, both Republicans and Democrats, are not always there's not always transparency.
Right.
There is not always full disclosure, and that in fact there is misleading information, misinformation, if you will, being presented in these ads. So, to what extent does this damage the process of electing the most qualified individuals to sit on the state's highest court?
There are two kind of questions implicit in that. One is, should we be electing these guys at all in the first place? And two is, if we're going to elect them, what kind of rules do we set? The first is sort of a philosophical question, right? And I think there's a good case can be made on either side of this. You know, there's an argument that maybe should be appointing these guys, and that's what Pennsylvanians for Modern Courts and some of these other organizations you mentioned favored. The counter argument to that is all you're doing then is pushing the politics further up the food chain. Now
sure.
it's just some political insiders who do this or whatever.
Well, you know, when you look at the president appoints the members of the Supreme Court,
right?
It's interesting that, and people have talked about opening that up for people to vote on, but here at the state level, we don't have that.
Right.
What is the better system?
It depends on your definition of better, right? I mean, I think one thing we can say is there seems to be this belief that if it was appointed, it would be less overtly political. But there's I've talked to a lot of people, and there's a lot of research on this, that the politics, who appoints you, the politics of that person, tend to predict how you'll act on the bench at least as much and maybe more than the politics of the party you run under if you're
mm-hmm.
in an election. So
sure.
whether you're appointed or whether you're running for yourself, there's a definite partisan component to who gets to the kinds of decisions that you'll make. The other question you asked was just whether these particular ads damage the process or whatever. And I think the question there then becomes, does this kind of advertising, does allowing sort of unlimited spending, does allowing these outside groups to take money directly from unions or directly from a corporation and use that, is that good for democracy? And I think that's a question that applies not just to judicial races, but to any race, right? I mean, Citizens United affects the way we elect everybody from the president on down. I think with judicial races, the contrast is particularly marked because we expect more, right, from our judiciary. There's a feeling that these guys shouldn't be in the fray the way a politician should be. But the question is the same, I think.
And also, when it comes to the Supreme Court, you might hear a candidate or an appointee to be sitting on the Supreme Court. You'll hear about their ideology. You'll hear whether they are liberal or conservative, but they're not identified with a party the way that they are when they're running for office.
Yeah, I mean,
to sit on the bench.
I think that's less true, say, at the U.S. Supreme Court level. Everyone knows Scalia was a Republican appointee, and everyone kind of thinks of him that way. And I think you could probably go around and break those guys out. I think that's less true at the state level, in part because we don't really know who these guys are, right? We don't necessarily know. You couldn't necessarily pick out, you know, Justice Todd out of a lineup, per se. And I think, too, there are some high-profile cases where candidates have gone against their political inclinations. And we should say that, too. Justice Castillo, when he did that opinion, sort of overturning much of the state law governing the natural gas industry, he's a Republican, and that was a Republican-drafted bill signed by a Republican governor. So it's not always the case that these guys go with their political inclinations. But as to the extent that there's a good indicator, that may be it. I'll have a story about this out on Sunday, by the by, which is why I'm primed on talking about it.
Well, we'll look forward to that. And I've enjoyed reading your coverage of this having you come in and talk about it. We've been talking with Chris Potter of the Post-Gazette about the increasing amount of ad money being spent in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court race, which wraps up on November 3rd, that's when you get to go and vote. Chris Potter, thanks for helping contribute to informing people so they make an informed decision on November 3rd.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll preview the grand reopening of the Westmoreland Museum of Art, and later we'll hear from a University of Pittsburgh researcher working to mass-produce stem cells. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.